The Fan on Demand. From the skills of killer Canadian Milos Raonic to the spacesuit outfits of Serena Williams, this is Total Tennis Coverage. This is Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Here are your hosts, Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbett of Tennis Canada.
Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, David Alter filling in for Roger Lajoie, joined as always by Tom Tebbett. It is a special Rogers Cup edition of Aces here on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Coming up, Roberta Vinci. What a tournament she's had. Mr. Tom Tebbett had a chance to go one-on-one with Roberta Vinci. You'll hear that in the following segment. We'll also take your questions, as always. If you have a question about the Rogers Cup, you can ask Tom or myself at my email address, which is david.alter@rci.rogers.com, or you can mention me on Twitter at davidalter590, and Tom or myself will answer your tennis questions. Tom, you had a chance to go one-on-one with the CEO and chairman of the WTA, Stacey Allister. What can we expect from the interview we are about to hear?
Well, Stacey Allister, amazing career, worked at the tournament here, vice president of Tennis Canada, tournament director, and maybe she's the most powerful woman in women's professional sport. So I talked to her earlier today.
This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. To get up-to-the-minute tennis news and scores, visit lovemeansnothing.ca. Tennis is spoken here. Without further ado, Tom Tebbett, one-on-one with Stacey Allister.
Stacey Allister, welcome to Aces.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be on your show.
Well, great to be back in Toronto. I guess the old hometown for you.
It is always nice to come home, absolutely. I don't miss the traffic, though, but it's nice to see friends and family.
That's good. Well, congratulations. I guess it's on Saturday. You'll be inducted into the Rogers Cup Hall of Fame.
That's right. Saturday night after the first women's semifinal up here at the Rexall Center. So, I still don't think I've fully captured what it means, but I'm really looking forward to the moment.
It must really be fun because you obviously played a fairly important role in getting the Rexall Center completed back in 2004.
There's no doubt. The Rexall Center is one of my biggest accomplishments that I'm most proud of. That, along with making sure that Canada stayed at the very top level on both the men's and the women's tours, because ultimately, having the best events, the top sanctions in a great building like the Rexall Center and Stade Uniprix, that will ultimately drive the revenues necessary for Tennis Canada to have more Rebecca Marinos and Miloses.
You've been the chairman and CEO, I guess, for 2 years now, a little bit, slightly over 2 years. What's the most important thing that the CEO and the chairman of the WTA does?
Well, I think overall, I day to day help to make sure that our players can maximize their opportunity at our 53 events. So, making sure that the circuit runs efficiently and well for their overall well-being. And then on an external relations, it's very much about promoting women's tennis, working with our corporate partners, working with governments to bring more women's tennis to certain markets. And, you know, I spend a lot of time doing what I'm doing right now with you, and that's talking up women's tennis.
This may be a little bit of a flip question, but are you pals with Gary Bettman, David Stern, Roger Goodell, and Bud Seeling?
I know David Stern. He's been a big supporter of the WTA. last September, during the U.S. Open, he actually came and visited with our board. It was the second time that he's done that. So he's a good friend of women's tennis. He follows tennis. I sometimes will get an email from him when he can't find it on television. So I've given him a free pass to tennistv.com. And, the other boys are busy doing their own thing, and I'm not sure that they spend as much time thinking about tennis.
What can David Stern tell a WTA board when you have a meeting? What kind of thing would he maybe advise you with?
Our session this past year with David had a lot to do about building the brand in China. David was the visionary, the leader in sport over 20 years ago when he went to CCTV and said, here's NBA men's basketball. today, and our great Canadian David Shoemaker is now in China as the CEO of NBA China. He has over 200 staff working in China alone, building and promoting men's basketball, and they don't have a franchise there. So it's incredible the business that David has created in that market.
You succeeded Larry Scott, but you were there for a couple of years, basically as president, working under him.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference once you're the head person there, once you're in mm-hmm. charge?
Well, I think the biggest difference are some of those moments where the spotlight is 100% on you, where people are looking for comment or decisions. So probably for me, that first telling moment was New York during Serena and Kim's match during the semifinals. So that was sort of like, okay, this is now very different than it was when I was number two, because Larry would have to step forward and deal with a matter like that.
So did you really, was that kind of a baptism of fire that you got through that okay?
Well, I've had a lot of crises working here at Tennis Canada for 15 years. I've dealt, I think, with every natural disaster that a tournament can be thrown. So it was just a moment that was felt different, that's all. It was well-trained to deal with those types of situations, but it was that, you know, sort of in my mind, I said, okay, this, when they say it's lonely at the top and this is the moment, that was actually the first time that it felt very different.
Right. Tennis is a worldwide game. I think I may know the answer to this question, but where do you see the best potential for growth for the WTA?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely full with our schedule. Now, there's no shortage of countries that want to host a WTA event. I was, in fact, just in Bulgaria last weekend announcing our new Tournament of Champions going there in 2012. So it's, you know, it's hard to get on the WTA. But as we look long-term, there's no doubt Brazil and India are two major markets that we ultimately need to get to. So, right now we're talking to Brazil about the year-end championships. Our year-end championships will be in Istanbul for the next 3 years, but we're beginning to say, where are our championships going to be in 2014? So that's a market. India is a very important market. And then, look, I just think the whole Asia-Pacific part of the world will be where the WTA realizes significant fan growth and financial growth in the next decade.
And obviously the Olympics are coming up next summer. How is the WTA going to be involved with the Olympic Games in London?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Olympic Games are run by, obviously, the International Tennis Federation, and our athletes are the product. So we work with the ITF. Some of our staff help out, and that's always good because the athletes like to see familiar faces. And our staff know the personality and their routines. And so we're on the ground to help our athletes and to work with the ITF and the London Olympic Organizing Committee to stage an exciting and great games for the fans and for the athletes.
You've obviously brought a few innovations into the game, like on-court coaching. Is there anything else in the pipeline?
We've got a couple that we're looking at. I think I'm mindful of, for me it's always about time, because I'm concerned about, you know, fans' time. They have less time. So one of the criticisms that we're currently getting is that matches are long, players are taking a long time in between points. So could we introduce a shot clock? We wouldn't be changing the rules, but we would have potentially a clock on court that would count down after each point. And, you know, the fans would start to say, oh, she better get going because time's running out. So that's an idea that's currently being tested and contemplated. And obviously the biggest area of innovation for us is maximizing distribution of content through social media. So whether it's getting more tennis on mobile devices for Sony Ericsson and for Rogers, or feeding content to all of the social media platforms where we have 21 million fans engaged with our athletes right now, that seems to be where our primary focus is right, as it relates to trying to innovate and drive more growth.
Stacey, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I've been in Montreal for the last 4 or 5 days, and everybody keeps coming up to me and saying, cause, as though I'm supposed to know something, why are we having the men's and women's tournaments in the same week? Mm-hmm. Why are we having the virtual combined tournament, as we call it, for television? You were there at the very beginning of all this, and maybe one of the people or the person who came up with the idea. How do you explain the fact that we have the two tournaments going on in the same week this this week?
Yeah. Well, combined events have been a long-term strategy of both the ATP and the WTA for well over a decade. The genesis of the strategy comes with the facts that the four most successful events in the world, the four Grand Slams, are all combined men and women. Then both tours had a very successful combined event in Miami for years that really became our slam. And then Indian Wells followed. And then Madrid followed. And when we did the circuit structure, what we wanted to do as we streamlined were have these big occasions, these big moments where men and women combined on big stages would play. So Canada was in a very interesting position because they had a very successful model of Toronto, Montreal, 2 weeks back-to-back, their Grand Slam, but obviously not combined. At the end of the day, to work with the calendar, going back to trying to have a healthy calendar and only so many weeks on the calendar to achieve the strategy, we needed to compress, and we needed Canada to combine and Cincinnati to combine. So Cincinnati also has combined next week. Men and women, they'll be different because they'll be in the same venue. And we knew all along when we were building the Rexall Center that long-term this was probably going to happen, and for Canada to stay at the top of the game, at the very highest level, combining was necessary. And Canada always knew it could be virtually combined and be uniquely different. The only tournament in the world that could combine and still preserve the importance of being in a major market like Montreal and a major market like Toronto.
Well, it's I think it's working okay. It's obviously something that's going to take a while to get used to.
And any change is going to take some time for acceptance. I've heard both spectrums of feedback this week. Last night, we were at home watching, and friends and family were loving it. For them, it feels bigger. It feels like this is more important because there's so much media coverage about it. We went back and forth as fans watching the women's match and then going to watch the Nadal match. Then we came back and we watched Stephanie's match with Azarenka. I'm sitting here as we're talking. I'm watching both here on site, and how cool is that? That wouldn't have happened with the back-to-back weeks. And I realize, the broadcast is being a little bit compressed, but that's the beauty of having a partner like Rogers. Multiple platforms and multiple distribution platforms, whether it be through mobile or internet. So if a fan wants a match, they're not going to miss out. They can just, tape it or see it through our archives. So I think it's gone well. Tennis Canada has embraced it. It's always been about the fan for them, and being able to have both cities being broadcasted in each is great, even though we had a little power outage this morning.
Right. Final question, Stacey. How did a kid from Welland, Ontario get to be chairman and CEO of the WTA?
It really still, Tom, I have a hard time believing it. I do at times reflect that I'm the head of the organization that Billie Jean King founded. My very first job in tennis was cleaning the red clay courts at the Welland Tennis Club. And how do we go from there to the international stage, representing our country and representing all of women's tennis? So I think the key to my success has been, absolutely a lot of hard work, and I've had great people around me supporting me, whether it be the volunteers and the Tennis Canada team and people like Derek Strang and Jim Fleck. I've always had people who believed in me and gave me a platform to make it happen. So fortunate from that perspective. And then at the end of the day, I've got a great product, and I'm good at selling. And so, I'm fairly lucky that every day I wake up and get to market and sell the best female athletes in the world.
Well, Stacey, it's been great having you on Aces tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
We hope you'll enjoy Saturday night.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
There is Stacey Allister, the CEO and chairman of the WTA, with Tom Tebbett. More coming up on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Grass, clay, or hard court, wherever the game is played, we'll be there. This is your tennis show, Aces, with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbett of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
David Alter filling in for Roger Lajoie alongside Tom Tebbett. This is Aces on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. And this segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona Extra. Pick up your six packs of new Corona Extra limited edition bottles at the LCBO and the beer store. Visit findyourbeach.ca to vote for your favorite bottle. Well, we heard from Stacey Allister, the chairman and CEO of the WTA, and moments from now, we are going to hear from Roberta Vinci, who has had quite the Rogers Cup here in Toronto, beating a former number one and a current number one en route to a round of eight. I guess that would be a quarterfinal berth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a logical person to see in the quarterfinals, especially when you're coming from the eighth of the draw that has the top seed Caroline Wozniacki in it, Roberta Vinci, who's 27 years old, only 5'4", number 22 in the world. She upset Wozniacki yesterday, and today she beat Anna Ivanovic. Not as much of an upset, because Ivanovic is number 16, Vinci's number 22. But really, for her to be in the quarterfinals is really, it's fun, actually, too, because if you watch her play, she's much more enterprising than most of the women. She goes to the net all the time. She's got a one-handed backhand. She chops it. She just has a lot of fun playing, and nobody would have expected it, but I think we should enjoy as best we can from now to the rest of the tournament, or as long as she lasts.
Coming up on the program, we'll take your questions. If you have a question for Tom or even myself, you can email david.alter@rci.rogers.com. Our Twitter is @davidalter590. That's coming up in the next segment. But right now, here is Tom Tebbett, one-on-one with Roberta Vinci.
Roberta Vinci, welcome to Aces.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had a second big win today. You beat Anna Ivanovic, and yesterday you beat Caroline Wozniacki. Why are you playing so well?
Well, I don't know. I'm confident, I think. And also today I played a good game, really good game today, better than yesterday, I think. And I'm so happy. I won against Ivanovic also in Pattaya this year. But, if you win in a big tournament, it's much better.
And how do you like playing? You grew up in Palermo, I guess is in Sicily.
Yes.
And that would have been on clay courts. How do you like playing on hard courts?
Well, I like to play on hard court because I play a lot of slice. I go also a lot to the net. So, yes, in Palermo I will practice on clay, but I like to play also on hard court.
And I've seen you play many times, and I really enjoy watching you because you serve in volley, you go to the net, you do have lots of variety, and not too many of the women players play with the range of shots, all the different shots that you have. Why do you think you have a game that has so many different sides to it?
Yes, I play, as I told you, a lot of slice, and I think that I'm probably one of the players that play on this style of game. So the players, they probably don't like to play against me because I go to the net, I play a lot of slice, and I think that this is the key that I won also today and yesterday.
And how did that game develop? Why did you start to play that game rather than just... I know you have just a one-handed backhand.
Yes, but I play one-hand backhand also when I was young. So I improved my game, but this is my style when I was young.
And it just came naturally?
Yes, so naturally, yes.
And your coaches didn't encourage you maybe to try a two-handed backhand?
No. But I don't want to play on two-hand backhand.
No?
I don't, no.
And you're just 5'4", just tall, and you go running to the net, and then you have many of the other players, some of the Russian women are very, very tall, very strong.
Yes.
You're not afraid when you're at the net and they're hitting the ball very hard?
No. No, because I play a good volley. So no. I'm confident when I go to the net. No, feeling
and,
confident.
Also, you've been very successful in doubles. Obviously, with that style, that helps you.
Yes. I play doubles with Sara, and she's another Italian player, and she's my best friend. We play good double. Also, yesterday we won against Vesnina and Mirza, so we play so good. And then at 5 o'clock, I will play the second round here in double.
And do you enjoy doubles as much as singles, or do you consider yourself more of a singles player?
No. I also like to play doubles because with Sara it's so funny. We are so friendly, so I like to play also double.
And I was looking at your results this year, and I think Indian Wells, Miami, Marbella, Stuttgart, you lost in the first round.
Yes.
And then the next tournament in Barcelona, you won the tournament.
Yes, so strange, huh?
Well, how did that happen?
Well, I didn't play so good in Indian Wells and Miami. I lost first round also in Stuttgart. But in Barcelona I won three titles. No, two titles and one final. So I like Barcelona. But I played good on that tournament. You know, every day is strange, it's difficult, but you can win every match also against the number one in the world, like yesterday.
Yeah. You then in the summer, just I guess last month or before Wimbledon, you won Hertogenbosch,
yes,
which is on grass.
Yes.
And you beat Dokic in the final and Cibulkova, Wickmeyer. So it doesn't seem to matter to you which surface you are playing on.
Yeah, this year I won in Barcelona on clay, in Hertogenbosch on grass, and last year on hard court in Luxembourg. So I like to play in all surface, but probably grass is my favorite surface because I play a lot of slides, and on grass is very difficult to play against me. But probably grass court is my favorite surface.
Well, at Wimbledon this year, I noticed that in the third round you lost to Kvitova.
Yes.
And Kvitova, of course, became the champion.
Yes.
What do you recall? Yes. You lost 6-3, 6-3. What do you remember about that match?
Well, she was a tough match. She played unbelievable. And then she won the tournament in Wimbledon. So, I played a good game too, but she was so strong. She served unbelievable. And on grass, it's difficult to return. But, I won two rounds in Wimbledon. So it's good also for me. If I lost on third set, then third round is okay.
And do you remember who you beat in the second round?
On the second round in Wimbledon, I won against Marino.
The Canadian,
yes.
That wasn't very nice.
Yes. She's a good player. I think she's so tall, and she serves good. But I play better than her.
Yeah, I think she was leading 4-1 in the first set.
Yes, 4-1 or 5-2, I don't remember, but I think 4-1. She was 1 or 2 break up. But, and then I won 7-6, 6-2, I think.
Right. So now you also won in Budapest just a few weeks ago, I guess.
Yes, on clay, yes.
Right. Do you enjoy traveling around the world? Is it difficult for you?
It's difficult, but I enjoy. I like.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, when you travel around the world, obviously I assume you like to go somewhere where you can get some Italian food.
Yes, for sure.
And
when it's possible, I go to Italian restaurant because I'm Italian. I like to eat some pizza or some good pasta. And when it's possible, I try to eat some pasta.
And what are your favorite Italian restaurants around the world? Where would you say are the ones you like the best? In which cities?
I think in New York, there is a good restaurant. The name is Bice. It's a good Italian restaurant.
Right. And anywhere else, like Melbourne or Paris or anywhere?
I don't remember exactly, but there are a lot of good Italian restaurants around the world.
And you will be playing Samantha Stosur in the quarterfinals tomorrow. Do you have some matches you have played against her in the past?
I don't think so. I never play against her. Well, it will be for sure a tough match. She's top 10 in the world, and she beat also today Lina. So we will see tomorrow. I'm happy to be in the fourth round, and I never play against her, so we will see tomorrow.
Did you play her in doubles, maybe?
Again, double, yeah. I play against her in double, and I lost many times, I think.
So is Roberta Vinci very famous in Italy?
Yeah. I'm starting to be famous in Italy.
And do you like that?
Yeah, for sure, yes.
Yeah, and so people stop you on the street sometimes?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes, yeah, sometimes no, but it's okay. I will do my best, and then we will see.
And just one last question, Roberta. Who would be your the women tennis players that you admired when you were growing up? Did you have an idol?
But Italian idol?
Italian or somebody from some other country, one of the great players, the women players?
No. Well, my idol was Martina Navratilova when I was young, for sure. But now I don't have an idol.
No?
No.
Well, you're 27 years old now, so it's okay. You don't have to have an idol. And Martina won this tournament, so let's hope that maybe you can win this tournament.
I hope. It's I hope too, mamma mia. Yes.
Well, good luck, and grazie for being on the show with us tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Grazie.
There is Roberta Vinci with her own Tom Tebbit. And Tom, some restaurants. She has quite the restaurateur picking out a famous restaurant in New York.
Yeah, I didn't understand it too well. It's B-I-C-E, Bice, in New York, for anybody who's going down there. I assume that she has a good taste in restaurants, especially Italian restaurants, obviously. And should mention, I talked to her about 4 o'clock this afternoon after she'd won her match with Ivanovic. She subsequently went out and with her great friend Sarah Errani, unfortunately lost her doubles match. But maybe these two big wins in 2 days has taken a little bit out of her, and she's saving herself up for tomorrow.
Vinci's route, she took on Janina Wickmeyer in the first round, and then afterwards beat the current number one in Caroline Wozniacki, who had a direct bye into the second round. That was a straight sets victory, and then another straight sets victory over a former number one in Anna Ivanovic. So certainly someone to keep an eye on over the next few days as the Rogers Cup continues in both Toronto and Montreal. Coming up, we're going to take your emails. Again, that email address is david.alter@rci.rogers.com, and we will answer your questions on the air. As well, we have a pair of tickets to give away for the evening semifinal. That is this Saturday night, so you're going to want to listen for the trivia question which Tom will provide. It's all coming up on Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Join online at fan590.com. Viewing every game like Hawkeye Tennis Technology. This is Aces with Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Gotta hold on, a new sensation, right now.
It is Aces on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. David Alter filling in for Roger Lajoie along with Tom Tebbit. Time for your questions. If you have a question for Tom or myself, you can email us at david.alter@rci.rogers.com. Also, you got a trivia question coming up towards the end of the segment for your chance to win a pair of tickets for the Saturday night semifinals. So you're not going to want to miss that. Right now, it's time for your questions. And Tom, we've got a lot of them. And let's start off with the very first one. This first one from Mac Sizz, who actually won the trivia prize from last week. And he says, do you think some fans put too much stock in the Nadal-Federer head-to-head record, given that a disproportionate number of their encounters have occurred on Rafa's best surface and Federer's least favorite surface, clay? I'd argue if they had played more on grass and hard courts during Fed's prime years, the head-to-head record would be more respectable for Fed. Mac in Toronto, your thoughts?
I think Mac's right. I think Mac's right. This is sort of an eternal discussion that people have in tennis, and You know, there's lots of things you can take into account here. For example, Federer, I think, has five times won the year-end championships. Nadal's never won the year-end championships. Now, it's not a Grand Slam, but it's probably the next important event after the Grand Slam. So there's certainly some truth in that. And now, as much as you talk about Nadal dominating on clay, now you've got Djokovic winning five finals in a row against Nadal. So then you can use the argument that way. But it's nice to have the discussion, and there's obviously good points on both sides.
Yeah, if it's a triangle of who's the best and one is beating the other and the other one has everyone's number, and it kind of goes in a bit of a circle, for lack of a better way of saying, instead of a triangle, because there's three. But at that point, you argue, okay, well, who's the better of the three if one can dominate the other, but then no one can dominate both? So it certainly does bring up an interesting debate. Next question comes from Aaron Malloy. Hey, guys. What is the issue with Carolyn Wozniacki that has kept her from winning a major thus far? Is it simply a matter of not enough offense in her game, or is there something else that's missing, Aaron?
Well, I would say that I thought at the end of last year, actually, she played in the year-end championships. I believe she lost to Clijsters, and I thought she played more aggressively, and I thought going into this year, I really thought she had an excellent chance to win the Australian Open, but she's kind of tailed off since then, and I think maybe it's mental now. It's in her head. She just doesn't have the confidence, and there's other players that know that if they go for their shots against her, she can run shots down, but sooner or later, she's not going to be able to reply with anything too big, and if you play well that day, you can beat her.
Let me ask you this, then. How much weight do you put in the number one seed in the women's game when it's so wide open that, you know, anyone can take that seed by going on a string of great results? We see the kind of jump that someone like the Wimbledon winner in Kvitova takes after winning a Grand Slam like that.
Well, she's a very good player, I think, Kvitova. Mm-hmm. So I think she has a chance maybe someday to get to number one. But it's the way the rankings are. You accumulate your points over the year, and you look at Serena with all the problems she's had, played so little, probably the logical and certainly the logical number one. And she has played, I think, three tournaments now over the last 12 months, so she doesn't have a chance to get the number one ranking. And Wozniacki has played by the rules, played a lot of tournaments, had a lot of decent results, so she's number one. So unfortunately, I don't think in the minds of her peers she's number one just because of her performances in the Grand Slams.
Next question comes to us from Coy. Hi, David and Tom. Does Sharapova have the game to win the French Open at some point? The surface does diffuse some of her power, and she hasn't mastered the art of sliding on the red dirt, but I feel like her underrated defensive skills and her competitiveness can make up for those shortcomings. That is Coy.
I thought she had a good chance this year. She made the semifinals. It was very impressive, but I have my doubts going forward. It's just she's an offensive player. She likes to go for her shots. She doesn't get the same reward on the clay. She's getting a little bit older. She's 24. She'll be 25, and she plays a tournament next year. Younger players coming up behind, I think, will be able to beat her on clay. So I think maybe this was her golden opportunity this year.
That provides another follow-up for me. I had a chance to talk to Sharapova on the opening day of the tournament when the top eight were resting on Monday. And she seems to get a lot of the, do you feel that, like, have you passed your prime? Do you feel like you're too old? When she just scoffs at that question because she has to point out, well, I'm only 24 just because I won Wimbledon at such an early age. I think you got a misconception of exactly how old I am. How much does that affect her longevity in terms of being able to come back and be among the tops?
Well, I think her shoulder surgery 3 years ago was a major thing. I don't think she's really ever come back 100% from that, although she's played well lately, did well at Wimbledon, obviously the final semifinals of the French. And mentally, I really like the optic of the younger player who's fearless coming up. And I think that the older you get, and Sharapova in tennis terms is getting older, you feel the pressure a little bit more. You're just not quite as fearless. And you saw the match today that Voskobova was, she just went for it. And Maria, I think, felt the pressure a little bit. So it's going to be tough. And like I said, there's other players coming. I think she can win more Grand Slams, but maybe her best years are actually behind her.
Okay, next question from Brian. Hey, guys, what are your thoughts on on-court coaching that the WTA allows in the non-majors? I heard John McEnroe say that he likes it because he feels it improves the quality of the tennis. I disagree. I haven't noticed any tangible difference in quality of play since on-court coaching started. I also feel like one of the beauties of the sport is that you're out there on an island and you have to problem solve for yourself without someone coming down from the stands and giving you your answer. That's Brian in Toronto.
Well, I tend to agree with Brian. Actually, I do agree with Brian. And another thing I don't like is that we often get a male coach coming down and talking to the young female player, and the female player a lot of the time sits there and says nothing. And to me, it's not a very good optic for the sport. And also, one of the reasons they did it is to have it for television. And often the conversations, for an English language audience at least, are a conversation you can't understand. So I'm not that keen on it. I agree that you should be on an island. I think that's the way the sport's played. I also agree that disagree with McEnroe. I don't think it has made that much of a difference. And it also looks bad because the men don't do it. If it was done in all of the sport, then fine, it would be okay. But the men don't do it. So I think the women look a little bit sort of a little more needy somehow, having to have somebody go out and help.
But do you think that's just as a testing ground that they're trying it in the women's?
No, it's been adopted now. Yeah. They took a year or two to test it, but now.
But maybe if they see success there, they would move that into the men's game. Would that at all be possible?
Men's game tried at one point, and everybody just said this isn't for us.
Okay. All right. Next question is from James. What are you guys forecast for? We were just talking about this, Petra Kvitova. I feel like she is the real deal and could win multiple majors. She has some variety. Her leftiness gives other players some matchup problems. And she seems to have that mental aspect of the game in order, unlike some of females we've seen recently, like Safina, Jankovic, or Ivanovic.
I think our emailers, not only this show, but the previous shows have been very good. And I find it hard to disagree with a lot of what they write. And Kvitova really impresses me. She is left-handed. She really hits a heavy ball. I saw a number of her matches the last couple of months. I mean, she lost today, but it's her first tournament back after Wimbledon. I think she has terrific potential, and all those things that he said about her are valid. She's a fine, fine player. And the only reservation I've had is she's quite shy, quite a modest person, and how all the acclaim and everything will affect her. But in terms of the basics of her game, she's very impressive.
We do have time for more of your questions. If you have a question for Tom or myself, you can email me at david.alter@rci.rogers.com, or you can mention me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is @davidalter590. Next question comes from T-Bert. Are you guys fans of the virtual combined events at the Rogers Cup?
Basically, what's happened here is that there's a trend towards mixed tournaments all over the world at the highest level of tournaments. The Premier 5, the women's tournament is, and the Masters 1000 at the men's is. What happened is Cincinnati followed that trend, became a mixed tournament, and that mixed tournament will be held next week. That week used to be our women's week, so we lost our women's week, so we had to move our women's week into the men's week, which is this week. So really, we had no choice, and all this debate about do you like it or not, it's a fait accompli. It works out well for television because we have a lot going on at once. Doesn't work out so well in the sense we don't have 2 weeks, but the women had to move into our week. Most times that would be fine. You'd have a tournament with a mixed tournament, but we got two cities to satisfy, and we can't have a stadium lying empty for a year. So this is the way it is, and there's some good things to it. There's some bad things to it, but it's nothing that anybody chose to have this way because of the trend towards mixed tournaments and Cincinnati going to a mixed tournament and taking our former women's week.
You know, the reason why I think this is a huge debate is because maybe there are other cities and there are other fans across Canada who want to see more tournaments, and maybe they schedule their traveling lives towards these events, and because they can't go to both physically, it hamstrings them. How much, it kind of begs the question, will we see more maybe lower level events across Canada because we're seeing the sport potentially grow, not just because of what Milos Raonic has done or any of the names, but we're seeing it on all levels and the sport growing within the country, that, you know, maybe it's time for cities like Vancouver or Calgary to start hosting some ATP and WTA events on the top tier level.
Well, the top tier is not going to happen. They tried to reduce the men's calendar last year and they just can't find any weeks. There's just too many tournaments, too many weeks, and there's too many people applying for tournaments. So it would really be nice. The only other tournament we really have besides the Rogers Cups is the Bell Challenge in Quebec City the week after the U.S. Open. And that's a low level women's event, but it's on the WTA tour. So, it's really tough, and there's demand, and it would be great if especially Vancouver could have a tournament. They had a couple of $100,000 challengers a couple of weeks ago, but getting on the top level of the tour, it's just not going to happen.
All right, let's talk about the actual tournament right now going on in Toronto and Montreal with a focus on Toronto. We see a lot of seeds, top seeds, falling by the wayside. It's not an uncommon trend, but it's been a little bit strange. Let's look at the quarterfinals right now and the round of 16. Are you surprised at the way things have shaped up? I don't think many people thought this many top eight seeds would be gone so early.
Well, we'll talk about the men first in Montreal. I mean, we were very spoiled here in Toronto last year. We got the top four seeds in the semifinals, and that doesn't happen very often. So I had a feeling it wouldn't happen this year. Murray, I think, whatever, just wasn't quite ready. And Nadal told us in Montreal last week he'd only had a week to practice because of a foot problem coming in. He knew he might be vulnerable. And Dodig, give him credit, played a phenomenal match last night. That was just as good tennis as you're ever going to see. The guy was really brave and courageous and took it to him and won with a fantastic shot on the match point. So it's going to happen. And you know, you never know which years you might get all four in the semifinals, and maybe one year you only get one.
Novak Djokovic, 50-1 now on the season. This is his year, no matter what happens, just given what he's already accomplished. Even if everything went south, he's going to get more ATP victories and Grand Slam victories than anybody else, it appears. What's next for him at this point? Can he sustain this? Is he at the age level where he can keep this? Is there any emerging talent within the top 10 that can unseat the big three right now?
Well, obviously there could be. There's Dimitrov and Milos Raonic,
yep,
and Harrison, and you know, a lot of people, Tomic from Australia. So there's guys who are there, and you never know how you're going to take a jump. And you don't want to say anything too sort of certain about Djokovic, because we were talking about tennis a year ago, everybody's saying Nadal. And he won the French Open, Wimbledon, U.S. Open. You thought, boy, he's just going to dominate. And look what's happened this year. So things can change quickly. But what Djokovic has done is amazing. The fact that he's 15-1 after his win today, the fascinating thing to see if he could win here this week in Montreal, if he could win next week in Cincinnati, and then if he won the U.S. Open. I mean, he might have to retire, because that would be such a phenomenal start to the season. The season would almost be over. So hats off to the guy. I've never seen anything like it before.
Galina Voskvova, quite the tournament for someone who really came out of nowhere on the women's side. A couple of big wins, first in the first round, knocking off Marion Bartoli, who was the top seed playing in the first round. And then, you know, after getting through Panetta, going on and beating Maria Sharapova, the number 5 seed. That kind of tells you, if you can knock off a couple of top seeds like that, that it's not really a fluke. It's not one of those catching the top flight player on a bad day.
Well, she's ranked number 135. She's 26 years old, so it's not as though she's a rising star who's a teenage phenom, mm-hmm, or something. But to win, to have those wins and to win the way she did, sort of by hitting aggressive shots, is very, very impressive. And she's 6 feet tall. I always thought of her as a doubles player. But, I mean, she's having a fantastic week, and full credit to her. And we'll see how much farther she can go. She's going to play Azarenka in the quarterfinals, and that would be a difficult one for her to beat. But she seems to be just on a wave and playing really, really well. So we'll see what happens.
Should mention, this segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank Financial Group. Need a smarter mortgage? All-in-one banking from National Bank gives you highly competitive mortgage rates plus a line of credit. For details, visit nbc.ca/all-in-one. All right, it's trivia time for your chance to win a pair of tickets for Saturday night's semifinal event here in Toronto for the Rogers Cup. And Tom, you've got quite the trivia question.
Well, this is a little bit of an odd one, but I'll try it out anyway. We've got Andre Agassi coming this weekend to play in the Legends Cup, and Andre Agassi won a total of 8 Grand Slam titles. But of course, famously, I think it was in 1995, he shaved all his hair off. So here's the question, and there'll be 3 answers. The question is, how many Grand Slam titles did Andre Agassi win after he shaved his hair off? 5, 6, or 7? So he won 8 overall. How many did he win after he shaved his hair? 5, 6, or 7?
And you can email the answer at david.alter@rci.rogers.com for your chance to win a pair of tickets. We're not taking calls, but strictly an email, and it's a bit of a different email filling in for Roger Lajoie today. But the first person to correctly answer that, I will respond, and we will give you all the details for how and where you can pick up your tickets for the semifinal over at Rexall Center for the semifinal, the evening semifinal. Nothing like tennis on a Saturday night, and it should be quite exciting. Tom, thanks again for doing this. Always a pleasure.
Lots of fun, David.
And that is going to be Aces for another week. You've been listening to Aces right here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.